Hello, this is Emily Nelson. I am doing an interview at the Ginseng Board of Wisconsin in Marathon's office. It is October 12th, 2013. And could you please spell your first and last name?
It's Art LaRue, and that's A-R-T. And the last name is L-A, capital R-U-E.
Right. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to come and be with us. I guess for my first question, I would like to ask, how did you get into ginseng farming?
It's a good question, but I had already started into farming, and not quite sure I remember what motivated me to get started at it, but where I started was out on the east side, halfway to Antigo, and everybody told me it couldn't be done out there, but I think my record shows that my yields were as good or better than most, and quality was way up from what a lot of other people were coming up with. So being all alone in an isolated area was a good thing.
When did you first hear about ginseng farming? I mean, I know we spoke earlier and you said that you originally didn't start out in farming. Could you describe your process of going from your original job and then kind of farming into a ginseng farmer?
I originally came from the Milwaukee area. I was a mechanical engineer. I worked at Cutler Hammer and Harley-Davidson and a few smaller places. And the smaller places that I worked at opened a plant up in Antigo, Speaker Motion. And they moved me up here, and I looked for a place on a lake, and I couldn't find anything, so I ended up buying a farm. And then I was just farming part-time, you know, crops and beef cattle, and then still working out. And the companies kind of tend to get bought up by somebody else and merged, and, you know, I didn't want to move anymore. So I ended up going heavily into farming, and ginseng was just an item of interest, and I pursued it a little bit and thought I'd try it, even though nobody else anywhere near me was doing it.
So how is ginseng farming different from your beef cattle farming or just your crop farming that you noticed originally?
Well, I think it was a much better moneymaker, and I never wanted to get as big as some of the growers did. I always tried to limit it to what I could do pretty much by myself. So I think the most I ever planted at one time was 2 acres. And more often than not, it was somewhere between a half and 1 acre that I planted every year. And it was just, you know, I'd have to hire some help to put up shade, you know, initially, not opening and closing, but just initially I'd need help putting the shade up and a couple things, you know, that I'd have to hire a crew for, but most of the things I did myself.
And so,
unusual.
I know that ginseng farming is pretty labor intensive. Could you describe the process of first growing ginseng and kind of just when it first gets planted to when you harvest it?
Well, you got the labor intensive part of it, I think, is putting up, you know, the garden itself and the shade and all of that. I didn't see it as that labor intensive, really, other than garden erection and tearing it down for harvesting. Wasn't that, unless you get really big. You know, if you get real big, then you're going to have to hire a crew just because of the volume involved. But I tried to do everything myself, and for me, it was always a good moneymaker.
And so your family wasn't a farming family when you were a child, or were they?
Well, my folks actually came from Illinois and moved up to Milwaukee, and my dad was a mechanical person and worked at the breweries and things like that in Milwaukee. But when I got moved up here, like I told you before, I worked for a company that moved me up to Antigo to help run the plant there. And I looked around and couldn't find a place on a lake like I was looking for, and I decided to keep looking, and I found a farm that was for sale, and I thought, well, that's better than living in town. So I bought it, and then after a few more years, then I had been farming, you know, beef cattle and things like that, and I just decided to get into the ginseng.
So how did Your farmhouse with the ginseng, how does it look? Could you describe what an outsider coming to your farm, what they would see when you were ginseng farming?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Okay, so kind of the physical features of a ginseng farm. What would we see? I mean, when you go to a dairy farm, you see the cattle, you see fields, barns. Well, what would you see at your ginseng farm?
Well, you see the garden itself, which is a lot of posts and steel cable on across the top, and the plastic. I always was with black plastic shade, and that's about really all you can see, you know, from the road to recognize it as a Shang farmer. For what it's worth, and I was in an area that was a lot of wildlife problems, deer and turkeys and things like that, and so I had to actually fence the gardens to keep the critters out. Also, you know, I used snow fence and DNR kill permits for deer and turkeys and things like that year-round. But
so how long have you been in ginseng farming?
I was in it pretty close to 20 years. I'm retired now. I dug my last garden last year. But
so how did technology change over the years from when you first got started to your last year?
That is a tough question. Well, I think the biggest thing was that, you know, we got involved, or I got involved with the Ginseng Marketing Order Board, and the Growers Co-op, you know, and we did a lot of research on different chemicals and things to get a little better control of disease pressure and things like that than what there was available to use on the gardens legally when I first started. And so, you know, I think those were big helps. Yeah.
So, for technology, just going a little bit more on that, you said before the interview that you weren't very good with computers and you didn't really like that part, but have you found that they've helped a lot more in just communicating about ginseng or maybe sales with ginseng?
Oh, probably. It's not that I don't like them. They don't like me. If I sit too close to a computer, they will not continue to function. And the only reason I can come up with for that is that probably about 15 years ago, I got hit by lightning. And it was a real strange thing. It hit a big pine tree in the yard, and it blew down the tree and, you know, knocked bark right off. It was a big, probably a 2.5-foot diameter pine tree. And it came from the top all the way down and blew the bark right off of one side of the tree. And then when it got to the bottom, it was just like a giant fireball that rolled from the tree across the yard heading for the milk house. And I happened to be standing right in front of the milk house. And it just rolled right over me and flattened me right on the ground. But I got right back up. But ever since then, I've never been able to get near a computer and have it continue to function. And not just home computers. Marathon County knows me quite well because I was on the Marathon County, a couple of different boards with them, and they kept after me to sit at their computer and put stuff in there, and I kept telling them I couldn't do it. Finally, they said, well, sit next to me, one of the guys said, and I'll put it in. You just tell me what to put in. And, well, I was sitting right next to them in front of the computer, and it only took about 5 minutes, and pretty soon it was going nutty, and I got up and went to the restroom. When I came back, he said, I understand now. Sit over there and just tell me what to do. So, you know, Maryland County believes me, too. They don't want anybody like me sitting by a computer.
So you spoke about the boards you were on. I know that you were on the Ginseng Board of Wisconsin. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Not sure what to say. It was I would say it's changed a heck of a lot in the last 15 years from what it was when I first was exposed to it. And I think the growers are much more involved, and it's a much more productive board as far as accomplishing things for the ginseng industry.
Could you talk about when you first started and your experience with how you think it maybe was struggling or wasn't doing as well as it could be?
Well, I think it was back then, it was pretty much a case of just do whatever the easiest thing was, and there was probably only half a dozen chemicals that were allowable on, you know, ginseng usage, and there was very little research going on as to, you know, what other things might be advantageous to the growers and non-problem for, you know, contamination of the product, you know. But a lot of things changed, you know, in the time that I was there.
And about what time did you get started with the board?
Oh, gosh. Well, it must have been, you're looking for a date, huh?
Just an approximation. Mm-hmm. I don't need anything too specific.
It's probably, what, about 5 years since, or longer, maybe about 6 or 7 since I've been off of it.
Yeah, I was going to say, you probably got started or joined the boards probably in the early 2000s, I would think, correct?
Yeah, probably about that, maybe the late 90s or early 2000s.
And I think there was a little bit more politics that were played in the earlier boards, where now it's like you mentioned, there's a lot more grower involvement, which everyone is now joined in together and for the better of the industry. Mm-hmm.
And I would also like to state on the record that Tom is also here. And so, Tom, if you could spell your name for us, please.
Sure. My name is Tom Hack, T-O-M-H-A-C-K. I'm currently a board director of the Ginseng Board of Wisconsin and been just recently hired on to take over as their international marketing director as of 1/1/14.
Thank you, Tom. Could you talk about what your position was on the board?
Been quite a while, but I don't know. I was, you know, on the board, but I can't remember. What was I, vice president for a while or something? And I don't think I ever was a treasurer or anything like that. I don't know.
Well, vice president for sure.
Yeah. And I did get involved in a lot of the chemical things and working with Madison and Noel Favia and some of the people down there on trying to get different chemicals evaluated and eventually approved for ginseng use.
What were some of these chemicals that you were working with?
Oh, gosh. I've been out of this for a few years now. But I don't know. I'm not quite sure. I can remember using some chemicals, but I can't remember which ones we...
Probably the biggest high-profile chemical would probably be diethane.
But I'm not sure if that was already approved.
Yeah, because we always had Section 18 for us to use it.
Yeah, can't remember.
But I think you were also involved when the ginseng industry transitioned from University of Wisconsin-Madison or to Michigan State as far as the pesticide research.
Mm-hmm. I think that was a big help, too.
Were there a lot of troubles getting people to accept chemicals in farming? Or why wasn't so many chemicals being used earlier?
Well, I think probably a lot of stuff was being experimented with and used illegally. You know, but I think most of the growers were actually quite content with the testing programs that we went through and evaluations and all that stuff and trying to get new chemicals legally available to use properly, you know, and I think it helped the industry too because you're creating a much more quality product, you know, with less chance of contamination with peculiar things.
So, would you say that you worked with advocacy for chemicals, or spoke with the government to help approve chemicals during your work on the board?
I'm not sure if I understand what advocacy... what did you say?
Did you work to get government approval for chemicals?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was a very difficult process in the beginning, too. It was not an easy thing, but it was a very important aspect to get things evaluated and approved for use, and then see that they were used properly according to instructions. It was an education process for the growers, I'm sure, because we had to explain to them what to do, and we had experimental gardens, and you know, it was different.
Yeah. Where were the experimental gardens located?
Well, it was out here on the west side of Wausau, rural areas.
And so were the experimental gardens just on regular farms?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And how did those go about? How did you...
Well, it was generally part of a ginseng growers operation, but, I mean, it was a small section of garden that was not harvested as a production item. It was just a small area that was an experimental thing for a particular chemical or chemicals. It was different.
And so you said there was a lot of difficulties in it. It was quite a problem to try to get these accepted. Could you talk about some of the difficulties in getting these approved?
I think Tom would be a better one to ask that one of, because it's been a long time since I was involved in it. But you have to work with the chemical companies. You have to work with whoever's doing the experimental garden on it to make sure it's done according to the directions. And then you got to do testing to make sure the contamination isn't a problem to deal with. And it's a lot of follow-up stuff to make sure everything was done accordingly to directions.
If you don't mind, I will add one thing in there, and forgive me for saying this, but or interrupting, but I know Art was very much involved, and one of the biggest challenges our industry has is because we're a small commodity.
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult for us to go to these chemical companies to say, we would like to use your product, we have all the test data, could you please put ginseng on your label? And they would not accept the risks. So therefore, that was some of the biggest challenges our industry had. Mm-hmm. And Art could probably take even count more from that.
Yeah. And, the ginseng was probably the way it's turned out anyway, and even back then was one of the higher dollar volume per acre crops that they were contending with. And I think it was awkward, because of, the dollar volume involved in production. It was much different than cornfields or wheat fields or anything like that.
And when you say dollar volume or value, how, with ginseng, what do you have to provide to get it to grow? Really, what's the process that you have to put into it?
These are trick questions, right? Yeah. Well, you have to prepare the soil, and part of that is probably working at least a year ahead for weed control, maybe 2 years. And then you have to actually, prepare the garden itself, because it's all, it's a crop that requires shade to grow. Otherwise, if you just grow it out in the sunshine, it ain't going to make it even one season. And so you got to put in a lot of posts, and in my case, it was steel cable and plastic tarps over the top for shade. And in my case, I also had a lot of difficulty because I was totally surrounded by woods in my area there, so I had a lot of pressure from wildlife, which included the most troublesome being turkeys and deer. But I did get a considerable amount of help from the Department of Natural Resources and had kill permits for that stuff, and they furnished fencing to go around my gardens to keep the critters out. And it was... I think I was probably one of the first ones to be dealing with the DNR on wildlife problems in our area here, but it was unique, and it seemed like, in my case, if I kept the critters out and there weren't any other growers close to me, that it really helped the gardening considerably, because there was less disease pressure too than, if it's the whole, and you can only grow it one time on that particular soil too. It's a one-time crop.
Has there been any crop failures in your experience?
Not on my farm, no. I mean, there were years that maybe it wasn't quite as good as previous years or vice versa, but I always had reasonable results as far as yield and quality.
Did you ever think about expanding?
No, I never wanted to get that big. I only wanted to do what I could handle on my own. You know, you have to still hire some help when it comes to putting up the shade or taking it down, and same way with picking up roots and things like that. But a lot of that stuff I was working on, and you know, if I'd have started sooner and been at it a little longer, I probably would have had a lot less help required for harvesting and things too, because I had other things in the mixer that I just never got quite finished with.
So who did you seek for help? Neighbors, or did you hire people through a job board? Or how did you find...
Well, just the neighborhood high school kids is what I generally hired to come and furnish labor just for, you know, the mechanical part of putting up a garden and things like that. Taking care of the garden is something I just did all myself, usually. So it was only the erection and disassembly at times that I really had to hire people. And then at the actual harvest, I hired people to help pick up the roots. But I was darn close to eliminating that, too.
So it was a pretty self-sufficient process for you.
Yeah.
So talking more about your personal hobbies, we're trying to also collect the culture surrounding farming. And so what are your hobbies outside of farming? So when you're not farming, what do you do?
Not too much anymore. I'm getting kind of old. Oh, I used to be a pretty devoted hunter. I liked hunting a lot. And I used to do more fishing, but I haven't done that in years. Wife and I did a lot of square dancing over the years. Things like that.
Where would you go hunting?
Right there on my farm.
And you said that you got a lot of permits from the DNR. Do you think that helped you more with your hunting? Like gave you a greater passion to go for it?
No, I'd probably, you know, the reason I had the permits, they were year-round kill permits for problems. And I think it kind of kills your interest in, you know, hunting after a while, because you just get sick and tired of putting up with the wildlife problems.
But so going back to square dancing, I was actually really interested in that part. How did you get into square dancing? Was it a family thing?
Not quite sure I remember how that happened. My wife is out in the truck here. She could probably answer it better than I can. But, you know, we did that for a lot of years, and in the last few years, we've been out of it because she had fallen and broken her leg, and we just never got back to it after that. But that didn't happen at square dancing. It's just something that happened to her when she was walking along and slipped.
So how was your wife with the ginseng farming? Did she help out with harvesting, or how involved was she, I suppose?
She was a little involved, but not real much. It was mostly just myself. And if I needed a little extra set of hands or something, she'd be there to help out. But she never was as interested in it as I was, except for payday.
So do you have any children?
Oh, yeah.
And were they interested in ginseng farming?
Well, I'm probably the oldest one you're going to be interviewing here. So by the time I started into the ginseng, my kids were all gone, and you know, my boy lives in Montana, and my daughter lives the other side of Milwaukee, down in East Troy, so nobody close enough to help out that way. But a lot of the neighborhood kids would come and help, and, you know, it was part-time work for them and extra money, and they were handy because they were, you know, close by, so it worked out pretty good.
So your experiences with the neighborhood kids coming and helping you were positive?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they helped me with other farming stuff, too, when I needed it. But, you know.
So you said that you're retired now from ginseng farming. Do you think that you'll still be involved with it in the future, just keeping up with how it progresses in Wisconsin?
Probably not. I got enough to worry about without that. I think Tom can handle it from here. He's got a few more years to go on it.
Art is no longer growing, but you know, he still comes to our meetings once in a while just to keep, you know, informed as far as what's going on with the industry, which I think is also very special as well.
Mm-hmm. What would be your best memory from going through ginseng farming? Anything about the process or getting into it?
The price of the roots has been going up considerably, and I think that's a good part of that is the quality of the roots that we were producing here as time went on. I think the quality of the roots has been improving greatly from what it was 20 years ago or 30 years ago.
And I know the ginseng in Wisconsin mostly gets exported to other countries. How did you find who to sell it to, even?
Well, there were, you know, buyers in the area always, you know, that would come during that time of the year when it was available. But I was involved with getting the ginseng co-op started also, you know, and I think that was probably one of the better things that we did as far as getting the prices moving up on the product and better quality control of what we had and, you know, insights into how to deal with the Chinese people and whatever overseas. And I never went over to China, but sat through a lot of meetings at this end.
So speaking about the ginseng co-op, could you talk a little bit how that got started and how it's grown?
Boy, you really are working on my memory here. That's the worst thing I got to deal with this the last year here. I'm getting too old. I remember memory kind of fading, but I'm not sure I can do that one.
That's okay. And so would you say that your experience has been positive with ginseng? Is there any regrets that you have?
No, I think it was a very worthwhile thing to be involved with as farming. And, you know, I still have some beef cattle and things like that, and I grow some cash crops and things, you know, soybeans and corn and things like that. But I think it was a very good moneymaker, and I think it was a very interesting experience, you know, just learning everything that we learned about growing ginseng over the years. You know, it changed a lot in the last 25 years from what it initially was. It was greatly improved in the process, I think.
What are some of the improvements that have happened?
I think that, you know, a lot of the chemical evaluations that we did for disease protection, that was part of it. I think back when you know, 20 years ago when I was first, or that's probably a little more than 20 years, that because it's from the time you plant to the time you dig is another 4 years right there, you know, to harvest. But I think over that period of time, the quality of the product has been really, really greatly improved, as have the yields per acre. Probably double what it was 20 years ago and the yields, and I think the prices, well, they're going up considerably in the last couple of years.
So what would be the price of ginseng as of last year when you had your...
up in that $80 a pound bracket.
When he says pollen, that's dried
roots, yeah.
So how much is the yield from an acre?
Well, I think the average these days is getting pretty close to a ton, isn't it?
So that's an interesting question. Mm-hmm. You know, you asked Art a question about his failures and his successes. We've heard where some ginseng farmers have their yield is maybe only 100 pounds off of an acre. The target has always been about 2,000 pounds. Mm. I would say we're getting up around 1,200 to 1,500 pounds per acre. Our yields are starting to come back up. Mm. So,
yeah.
When you get to the ton to the acre, and that's dried rud, mm-hmm. that is a significant achievement.
And I'm talking 4 year growth period there too. You know, what I dug last year, I can't remember how many pounds it was. It was about a half acre garden, and I dug it as 3 year olds, but it was, if I remember right, it was around 1,100 pounds, something like that.
Which is a good yield.
Yeah. And the price was good too, you know, because the quality is there, and I think that's a good part of it. If the quality isn't there in the roots, well, you're not going to get the price either. You got to know what you're doing to produce a good quality crop.
And so, when you say quality, what does that mean when it comes to ginseng? What are you looking for?
Well, if you have disease pressure or something in the garden, you're going to have discolored roots and a lot of other peculiar things, you know, and those roots just don't sell, so you end up losing a lot just to the scrap pile, you know. And I think, you know, over the years, you know, with the chemical evaluations that we did, I think we came up with a number of chemicals that were not harmful to the plant, but helpful, and not harmful to people's health or anything either. I think there was a lot of testing done and evaluations and whatever. I think it was a lot of work to produce a real good quality, healthful product.
Sharp and chunky.
Yeah.
No blemishes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know ginseng is really healthy. Beneficial to your health. Did your family use ginseng?
You know, that's a funny thing. We never did.
Is there a reason for that?
I guess I never thought about it. I don't know. Let's see. You know, I think the majority of the market for ginseng has always been Chinese. And that's where probably, still 90% of the product goes over there, doesn't it, Tom?
85% of it goes over
there.
Is there any processing done before you send it over, or do you send it over just as the root?
Well, as a grower, I would produce the crop and then get it cleaned and dried, and then it would end up getting sold through the co-op, you know, so I never really got personally involved with the customer. Or the customer's use for the product.
Have you found that the co-op has really been helpful to you as a grower?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
In what ways do they help out?
I think they were very helpful to the industry as a whole, encouraging a good, you know, production of a good quality product. And they were also very, very helpful in protecting the pricing thing so that the prices were moving up, you know, in the farmer's favor rather than letting buyers come in and, you know, just beat them down on the price. I think the price that, you know, the farmers were getting is going considerably from what it was. Cost of living has gone up considerably in the last 20 years, but, you know, I think the cost of, not the cost, but the value of ginseng has gone up faster than the cost of living, you know, because it is a super duper crop for what it's worth.
And when you were growing, I know we spoke earlier that there was a lot of price fluctuations and that you grew through that. Could you talk about that a little bit, about when those prices were changing and when you were maybe having troubles with the prices?
Well, it was... It's not so much that you're having trouble with it, but it was much more difficult to make a decent profit. You know, if the prices are down, chemicals are always expensive, and it was just difficult making a profit at the end of the thing. Where then, you know, now things are much more profitable than it was back then, but. The ginseng produced in Wisconsin has really gained a reputation for being a good quality, clean, disease-free product. And had a fair amount of demand coming, especially out of the Asian market from the Chinese.
So I guess my final question would be, now that you're kind of leaving the business or maybe just tapering off from it, what do you plan to do, I guess, with your time now that would have been spent farming ginseng?
Well, I'm still farming. You know, just for the record here, I am 72, so it's getting, you know, and, you know, if you got a plan on something that's going to take 4 or 5 years to between the day you start thinking about doing it and the day you actually can harvest it, and then maybe another 6 months to a year before you can actually get your cash back out of it. It's a little, I'm a little old to be fooling with it anymore, I suppose, but it's...
You think you'll be spending more time going hunting, or...?
Yeah, I don't know about... I'm still farming, you know, I'm raising beef cattle and some other crops and that. I've probably, you know, I'm getting up in years, so I'm kind of not as excited about the hunting part of it as it used to be, although I do still go deer hunting, but right there on the farm, you know, and it's not where I'm at. It's an area that's very different as far as wildlife problems, because, you know, I've got a lot of deer, and after the turkeys were introduced up into the northern part of Wisconsin, I all of a sudden got run over with those. It was, you know, nothing to see 35, 40 turkeys out there and a bunch, you know, and trying to get in the shang gardens and things like that. And you got to keep them out because they get in there and scratch and break the buds off and all kinds of things and affect your yield. So I had a lot of fencing problems to keep them out and under control. And the DNR gave me kill permits to deal with it too, you know, and I had neighbors that would come and shoot turkeys and deer and stuff like that. And there's still a lot of stuff in the area around me, and I think it was just early this summer, maybe the last week in May or first week in June, my wife and I were going away one night, and it was probably about 7 o'clock, and we just drove about a half mile down the road, and it wasn't quite dark out yet. It was, you know, probably half an hour from getting dark, and there was a field right there in one intersection out in the country, and it was probably only about a 4-acre field, but it had a little corn stubble on there from last year yet. And as I was approaching that intersection, I thought I saw a couple deer, and I started slowing down. And when I got up to the intersection, I stopped, and I told the wife, I said, count them, see how many. There were 45 deer standing in that 4-acre field. You know, so just as an example of the kind of difficulties you got, you know, with things like gardening for ginseng or anything else, it's interesting. And that area, it's the town of Hewitt, and it's about halfway between Wausau and Antigo, and there's a lot of, you know, DNR forest land and things like that, and it's pretty wild country, so there's a lot of animals to worry about. Bear too.
And I'm sorry, I know I said final question, but I guess I was just interested in, so the turkeys are only interested in the leaves and the seed part of the plant? They're not interested in digging it up?
Well, I don't think they're interested in the plant itself, but part of the growing process is you're shredding straw to mulch the beds, and there's always some grain in there. A little bit, no matter how good it was combined, there's always some, and they're looking for the grain. And there's, you know, I suppose a certain amount of, even if you're treating for insects and stuff, there must be insects get in that they go after, and they go in and scratch around in the beds and look for something to eat, and that's not good because they're breaking the buds off the ginseng plants, and that kills it.
Well, thank you very much for coming and speaking with me today. I realize that we're getting short on time, and I'd like to let you get out of here on your Saturday, but thank you for coming in again. It's October 12th, 2013, and we are speaking at the Wisconsin Board of Ginseng office. So thank you.
And the other thing I hope you still continue.